Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, the 20th of March, and I'm recording at 8:59 p.m., and that's Greenwich Mean Time here in sunny London. Okay, this being Friday, this is the big picture, long-term outlook for the various asset classes, but first, let's just have a little talk about what is going on here. I'll have a little talk about what's been going on here this week. And stock markets ending pretty much on very much a strong footing here today. But by far the most significant thing, it's something you'll be aware of because I've been writing about it the last couple of days or pretty much all week. And also talking about it in the audios, and that is, I am pretty certain myself that the U.S. Fed has been intervening to check the dollar's strength. Now, you know that dollar index, which had gotten up to just over the 100 level, and that was certainly a psychological resistance area overall, and it's certainly overextended, but the problem for the U.S. economy was that that dollar index had risen by just over 25% since last July when the move actually began. And this was a real headwind here for the U.S. economy, much more so than a few rate hikes. Now, we know, and I've been writing, that the Fed definitely wants to get at least a rate hike or two, quarter point rate hikes into the system this year. And they've really got a kind of a tight window because they've got obviously the rest of this year and maybe early in the first quarter of the year, then they're going to want to be in the background because of the U.S. presidential election. So today, what we saw, well, again, 2 days ago, we saw a big downward dynamic by the U.S. dollar index. Then yesterday, there was a sharp rally overall. Now, the Fed isn't going to say anything about its intervention policy. I mean, sometimes it has in past years, but most of the time, they'll do this on a very surreptitious basis. And it's not hard to understand why, because you don't want every financial journalist on the planet to be writing comments, either in praise or critical of the action and what it means and so on. But in here today, we saw another sharp pullback reversing most of yesterday's gains, if not more of yesterday's gains. It's actually more than yesterday's gains. It's still trading after hours here, but that dollar index is down to 97.81 as I speak. Now, what's the significance of that overall? Well, it would be risky for the Fed, dangerous for the U.S. economy if the dollar kept appreciating and was being affected by rate hikes. So really what they want to do is to get the dollar lower, and stop this self-feeding move that we've been seeing, and then get those rate hikes in, perhaps in September and December. Now, I think also this would be very good for the rest of the world because there are certainly risks to other economies, not least those that had borrowed in dollars, if you get the greenback going on and continuing to appreciate. So again, when we see the dollar down lower, and it's also helped lift some of the it's lifted all the currencies that have been weakening against the dollar in here. For instance, the Australian dollar is currently 0.7775. We look at, or I'm looking at, the yen, 120.04, the euro up to 108.21, sterling back up to 1.4949. And we've also seen the Indian rupee appreciate a little further. It's been a strong currency, I think the strongest currency in Asia. And then on Tuesday and Wednesday, we had those, well, actually, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, we had those sharp downward moves by the dollar against the Chinese renminbi. So the Chinese renminbi has been firming and gave up a little bit of those gains in here today. But basically, it's been a good week for firming Chinese currency. So I think the, not to belabor the point, but I think that we are going to have a bit more stability here in the currency markets, and some of the assets that had been moving lower as the dollar strengthened, since virtually all these commodities, for instance, are priced in U.S. dollars. We've seen some very sharp short covering take place, not least in precious metals, and that's pushed palladium. That's moved the least, but it's back up to 779. It's pushed silver strong in here today, back up to $16.73. It's pushed gold up to 1182 and change, and it's pushed platinum up to 1137 and change. Industrial metals also firmer on this basis. We've got copper here at up almost 10 cents. It was 9.5 cents in here, up to 275.5. That's been quite weak recently. All the industrial metals have really been quite weak. So again, more short covering, and we'll see plenty more of that. We'll see more of a recovery if this dollar continues to weaken. And I think the highs are in, and it will range sideways to lower. I think this will be a lengthy medium-term correction. In other words, it could last most of the rest of this year, possibly even a little longer. And but over the on a long-term basis, and this is a big long-term outlook as well, of course, then I think that we will see the dollar eventually move higher, and that will be underpinned by the technological lead that the US has, and also by the strong energy position that the US is in. Just going to have a little cough. Hold on. Okay. Now, let's talk about some of these stock markets in here and how that affected them. Well, they obviously liked it because too strong a dollar, as I mentioned earlier on, that's created a worry, and so we had good strong markets in here today. Just to give you a quick comment on that, Japan was a quarter to half a percent higher across the three main indices. China sector, well, the Hang Seng index is down a third of a percentage point, but I think that'll be up on Monday. And Shanghai Composite Index up another percent here. It's strong performance there overall. All the other China indices are a little bit higher in here, including Taiwan. And the one that's main one that hasn't performed, and this has been going on for a few weeks, is India, which drifted a little lower, three quarters of a, I should say, two thirds of a percentage point lower here today. Now, why would that be going on? There's certainly nothing that's worrying people to any great extent about India, but India had been the front runner for really quite a long time. I think its medium to longer term potential is outstanding, as you're probably well aware. But you know, in the day-to-day, in the short-term moves that we see in these markets, India was hot, became very overextended after an awfully good run. People were terrified of other markets, but they have rediscovered Japan. Even more importantly, they have rediscovered virtually all of Europe, and that's interested them. And the China strength, when they were worried about China previously, so that's caused some of the hot money to maybe pull out a little bit while India is experiencing a mean reversion back towards the rising 200-day or 40-week moving average that we put on most of our charts when we post them. So that's the story there. European stock markets today very strong. You will not be surprised to hear, and including the FTSE 100. It's not a leader up here today, but had a good day yesterday, and it's strong again today, up 0.75 percentage point. And that is helped, of course, by the resources shares that are in there. They're all getting a good bounce. Further evidence of that, Brazil, which has had a good week, and it had another 1.99%, nearly 2% gain in here today. Among the European indices, the big gainer was the Spanish market, up almost 3%. But German DAX index, again, it's been on fire, up 1.18%. Okay, government bonds, they're low, 1.93 for the US 10-year. So no inflation worries indicated there. That's for certain, and I think that they will. Well, it looks like they're just going to range around for a while longer, and that's no bad thing. And part of the reason for that is that the U.S. economy has been disappointing. I don't think growth's going to be very strong for the first quarter. I think we can attribute that almost entirely to the dollar strength, and also to the shakeout in the oil sector. But I don't think we need to shed too many tears over the oil sector. For instance, one of the smart things, I'm producing an article on this today here, is that all those U.S. shale producers, they have gone to the market and have been able to sell shares. And in other words, they've been raising capital. And that's a smart move here, because I think that some of those Middle Eastern producers, who were very concerned, understandably, by the success of the shale industry, they were hoping that these companies would disappear almost as quickly as they sprung to life, to take advantage of that big booming U.S. shale oil industry. Well, they're not going to disappear. A number of them will merge. A very few of them will disappear, but most of them have just gone out and raising capital. So they'll be around for a long time. And when oil does firm up, and it will from time to time, they'll do very well. They'll be more efficient because the technology's march will continue. And this is a healthy situation in terms of energy policies, I feel. Okay, so now let's stand back and say, what about these stock markets, and where are we really going to go here? Well, I think it's still pretty positive, largely because we've got a lot of capital floating around in these markets. Interest rates are still really quite low. Again, investment crowds can be quite nervous, so you're never more than a stone's throw away from some sort of geopolitical scare. I'm thinking Russia, although that's maybe a little bit quieter here at the moment, and hopefully remains so for a while longer. The big story, though, is don't fight the Fed or don't fight any central bank that's in an expansionist mode. All the people who have gotten it wrong here over the last few years, in other words, they've been short, or they've been underinvested, they were fighting the Fed. I think that's one of the first adages that I learned way back in the mid-1960s. You want to be on the same side in terms of your equity investments as the central bank. So if they're tightening, watch out. If they are loosening, let alone pumping in loads of money, as we've seen with the QE programs, then you want to be on board long. So, how much longer can we expect this to go on for? Well, the European markets, I describe them as being on fire. The Grexit situation will pop up from time to time, and I will be astonished if Greece actually manages to stay in the euro. Scare stories about a disorderly exit from the euro by Greece are, I think, probably exaggerated these days. I think it could be more of an orderly exit from the euro. It might cause a little havoc for Greece, which is why they don't want to do it. That's that, and further aggression possibly from Russia. Those are the two main concerns that they have to worry about. Japan, jumping around now to going back to Asia, Japan, I think is going to have accommodative monetary conditions for a long time. Some people are extremely critical of that, but have a look at a long-term monthly chart of the yen against the US dollar. I mean, my goodness, the yen was the strongest currency in the world for decades. It's just kept that relative performance going up until a couple of years ago. So it's about time the yen weakened somewhat, and that's crucial for Japan's economy. And then you might have seen Bernard Tan, Short Piece, a clever independent analyst from Singapore, and he showed those graphs. And the big story on it, and of course you can see those. I posted them yesterday. The big story on that is that in 2014, the tide changed. We had seen every year for a number of years. I think since 2009, we had seen people moving out of Japan, Japanese moving away from Japan, getting jobs elsewhere around the world. Well, in 2014, that stopped, and the net figures showed that some Japanese had moved back to Japan. Big sign in terms of confidence increasing among the working age population. Very good, very, very good evidence. I've seen so much what I consider wayward copy on Japan, and that's an indicator that I think is very, very important. Okay, China, enigmatic. I've often mentioned that, but the overall action remains favorable. The valuations are extremely cheap. India, maybe not. Maybe it's not going to do anything much more this year, or perhaps it will. I it's just that I don't. I'm not sitting here pining for India to resume its overall upward trend. I see no reason to get out of that position. I like India for the long term, but it's having a rest, and a consolidation, and mean reversion here is bringing the valuations down. It's oversold on the short term. For anyone out there who missed out on India and was hoping to get on board, well, this is a chance, but do it on a nibble. Nibble basis, I would suggest. So most of the Asia Pacific region, I think, looks quite attractive. Overall, one is spoiled for choice. The European markets are, I think, going to remain pretty much in form because their valuations are extremely competitive. Do the resources markets recover? They've taken such a beating. They're very cheap overall, as you know. They've been regarded, though, as a bit of a plague sector, understandably. But if you look at every past bull market, and when that bull market was very mature, let alone ending, the resources sector would usually take off and get some explosive moves to the upside. Well, we're a heck of a long way in terms of seeing an explosive. Well, put it this way, we certainly haven't seen any explosive moves to the upside. My feeling is that lies ahead of us, and these are cheap. The problem in terms of slowing it up is not so much a problem for the companies, because the companies that are well capitalized, I'm talking about the big ones, Rio Tinto, BHP, they have benefited enormously from the accelerated rate of technological innovation. So they can produce and they can find their metals and produce their metals much, much more efficiently here today. They're just mechanizing the whole system. So that means that more metals have been produced, and China has consumed less. But the world is, and there's also some substitution as well with some of these miraculous products like graphene. But certainly the demand for industrial metals is not going to dry out or die out. And I do expect to see a significant recovery by the resources shares before we have to worry about anything like a cyclical bear market for broader equities generally. So again, I'm saying this is still a favorable overall environment here for at least the lengthy for at least the lengthy medium term. Now, on a longer term basis, I think that the prospects for a secular bull market are really quite attractive. And that would be led by Wall Street, because it's got the best technology, and it also has that virtual energy independence. But so many other stock markets would perform very well in that environment overall. Now, I just think, just being very cautious here, because I've said this before, I think that we need to see a normalization of interest rates really before we can say, look, we really are in secular bull market territory here. So, that means, we can see some shakeouts, occasional sharp reactions here overall during that process of interest rate normalization. And that really hasn't started yet, although it's within sight here in terms of what the Fed will actually be doing. It's not something that I think we need to hide under the bed about. But we need to be aware that it may lead to some choppy action overall. And again, those other factors that would benefit, but technology's just really the big one. And this is such an exciting theme here overall. This is unprecedented. We've never seen an accelerated technological advance like this. People can talk to other hugely important technological developments throughout time, but they were very often one-offs and occurred over a period of many, many years, sometimes decades, whereas today you just look around and all kinds of exciting technological developments are occurring, and not least also in biotechnology, which has really come into its own. You remember that had a big boom in the late 1990s, and certainly formed a bubble, and there wasn't all that much actually going on in terms of biotechnology, not relative to today. So you had that big boom in the late 1990s as the last secular bull market was ending. Then huge retracement, lots of ranging activity overall, and then it's in the last few years that this has really gone into the accelerating product development and growth and earnings phase. All very exciting stuff, and I think that can last for a long time. All right. What about government bonds? I feel there's minimal investment appeal here, but the people who hold them will probably look on me with disdain as I say that, because they haven't lost any money, or very little if they have, and they've made a lot of money over the decades. But I can be brief on this. For them to do really well going forward, they've got to see, I think, a deflationary environment where there's minimal growth in perpetuity. Now, or I'll put it this way, if not in perpetuity, for a very long time to make that sector. To make those bonds safe and good investments to hold. We don't have that. I don't think we have that at all. I think what we will be seeing over the next few years is the global economy actually improving. I think you can see plenty of evidence of that around. Therefore, I think that there are risks that people will experience some significant profit erosion in global bonds over the lengthy, medium to longer term. And I would be just very careful in that sector. And also, talk about deflation. We still hear about this every day, but most of the deflation, certainly a huge portion of it, is as a consequence of technology, and I regard that as positive deflation. We're able to operate much more efficiently with costs coming down and produce so much more easily. And that is so good for corporations. Good for everybody except for the unemployed, but it's best of all for corporations. Well, it even helps the unemployed because a lot of them are setting up their own businesses. So I don't like the government bonds. That's the main theme I want to talk about to there. What about these commodities? I say that this is they've been treated like a plague sector, as I mentioned earlier on. They're awfully cheap, and I noticed that in Evelyn Garris Browning in her report that I posted earlier in the week that she wasn't as reassuring on crop cycles as I thought she might be. But the agricultural commodities, that's largely a weather play. That's in the hands of the weather gods. But the prices generally are really quite cheap, certainly for staple grains in particular, and I'm thinking of things like soybeans, which look like they're steadying up here a little bit. Potential base formation development taking place in terms of the industrial commodities, whether that's crude oil, industrial metals, they are flat on their back. And so I do think that there is certainly some medium-term recovery scope there, particularly if the dollar is weaker. And I think the dollar has peaked and will at least range sideways, but we'll see some further correction from the levels that we've actually seen here. But as the dollar is seen over the next few weeks and months to not be going higher, then more of those shorts will move away from the commodities and be replaced by some long positions, and those sectors will firm up from the extremely cheap levels that we actually see today. Precious metals, a major beneficiary potentially. Again, they've been on the rack until this week, but again, dollar no longer appreciating, that removes a huge headwind from the precious metals. Isn't it all interesting? Well, it certainly is for me, and I hope it is for you, and I hope you are profiting from a number of these very interesting metals. I hope spring is in sight where you are, in the Western world, at any rate. And just all the very best to all of you. Take care.